papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery.
It's the Media Project. No, I'm not Rex Smith. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Rex is away, Judy's away, and so we will now play. The we I'm talking about being Barbara Lombardo, who joins us on the program this week. She is the former editor of the Saratogian. She's currently a professor at the University at Albany teaching journalism students. Welcome back, Barbara.
I am glad to be here today.
Also with us, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman of Kingston and its associated publications, Mr. Ira Fussfeld. Ira, so glad to have you back.
Very nice to be back. The publisher emeritus stuff, just call me retired.
Well, you know what? I like emeritus. It says a lot. And I have a feeling with your institutional knowledge, you're going to help us today and wrapping ourselves around the media issues that are confronting us. So let's just stick with you for a second, Ira. What do you want to talk about today?
Well, there's only about 16,000 things we can talk about,
yeah.
But and it could change by the time this program airs, but we can't ignore what's going on with the Jimmy Kimmel suspension and all of the related topics, so I'm sure we'll hit that.
I'm sure we'll start with that. Barbara, anything else you'd like to talk about today?
There's lots of things, but I don't think there's anything more important than that at the moment for us to be discussing about what is the danger to the public and what should the media be doing about this federal quashing of the First Amendment.
Well, I'm shocked, Barbara, that you have already forgotten, as I would have if I didn't have it in front of me, that the New York Times has also been sued, $15 billion by Donald Trump. So that's another topic on the list.
It's all part of the quashing of the First Amendment.
And it's all related, exactly. And then I would like to do a little, do you guys remember WSBK-TV out of Boston used to have a show called Ask the Manager? And they would come on and they say, why did you take the Three Stooges off, you know, this week? So we're going to have a little Ask the Manager at the end of this show, which has to do with WAMC and its sports news.
Not just the three of us.
Yeah, the three of us are not the Stooges.
Well, not yet. I mean, have to let the listeners. That's a great segue, by
Larry
the way.
Larry and Curly here. That's what we got worried about what Mo was talking to.
Media at WAMC.org. You can let us know if any one of us is Mo. Well, let's get into it now, folks. This is the topic of the week. I was quite shocked, although I probably shouldn't have been, to open my eyes on Thursday morning this week and see the news that ABC has suspended Jimmy Kimmel's late night show indefinitely over his remarks about Charlie Kirk's death. A spokesman for Kimmel did not immediately return a call for comment. This from the Associated Press. Kimmel, like CBS late night host Stephen Colbert, has consistently been critical of President Donald Trump and many of his policies on his ABC show. CBS said this past summer that it was canceling Colbert's show at the end of this season for financial reasons, although some critics have wondered if his stance on Trump played a role. Well, folks, we've got a number of things to consider here. You've got a network. You've got someone who is seen to be doing political satire and commentary. And you've got a situation in which we also need to follow the money. Barbara Lombardo, where do you want to start?
Oh, boy. Yeah, there was a political cartoon a couple of days ago where there's a gentleman standing on a podium that says Republican Party, and he's telling the crowd, in recognition of Charlie Kirk's commitment to free speech, we are calling for the firing of anyone who criticizes him, which is just ha ha ha. You know, hopefully that guy doesn't get canceled anytime soon. The people who are saying that this is a business decision, not a, hey, it was up to the networks to decide what to do. They're making a business decision. This all intertwines when the government is threatening the businesses and trying to silence them and using the power of the FCC licensing or in the New York Times' case, the financial annoyance of these, you know, gigantic lawsuits that they have to defend, even though they are without merit. I am so worried about the closing of free speech in America.
Well, the contrary argument that you'll hear, and I'm not suggesting that I would buy it, although I do buy it to a certain extent, is that free speech is not being quashed in that by eliminating the platform that Kimmel had, Kimmel has not denied the ability to speak his mind about this firing or about anything about Trump. He doesn't have to worry about his point of view getting out there. But the ownership, in this case, the network, doesn't want him to do it on their air. Well, that's their right.
That's their right, but then he loses the platform. So, yes, he can say whatever he wants and reach people however he can. But the distribution, and we probably feel the same way about this, that the platform that he had wasn't his right to have that platform, and the owners of that could decide what to do about it. The fact that the owners caved, that this is the latest example of media owners caving, that's what really worries me. How are you supposed to reach the people when the comedians are silenced on the platform, and then they want to silence the reporters and the editors? I'm beyond words about this going to require an uprising, a grassroots uprising from the people who work for the media companies or other ways to try to tell their stories.
Well, there was a time, and it wasn't all that long ago, when attacks by a presidential administration, and it's not just this one, there have been others in the past, attacks on the media were prevalent and they were dangerous, etc. But the media organizations, by and large, stood up and defended themselves and protected themselves and in effect, won the argument. And they were able to do that at that point in time because the times were better in the industry. And they didn't have to worry about every single dollar that was coming in to the extent that they do now, because so much of it is run by stock exchange companies who need to be making money for their shareholders. But, you know, I'm sure, Barbara, you've had the same experience as I did any number of times, where advertisers would come in and say, we're going to pull our advertising from your newspaper because we didn't like so-and-so. And we would say to them, generally speaking, sorry to see you go, but we're doing business the way we know is right to do business. You don't hear that anymore, at least as much as you can hear it from the New York Times, which can afford it, and you can hear it from the Wall Street Journal. But smaller organizations are more in financial straits and they can't afford to stand up. They need to bow down.
So there's got to be an alternative to saying we have to capitulate, we must bow down.
And again, by the way, I'm not endorsing it. Yeah.
I do remember one of my many publishers during my stint at the Saratogian, Monty Trammer, who used to be
used to host the Media Project.
Yes, so I remember there was one time where one of our most prominent advertisers was upset about something that he knew that we were about to publish and said, if you publish it, we're going to pull our advertising. And he said, well, then you give me no choice than to publish the story. And sure enough, the guy pulled his advertising until Trammer left.
Yeah, but I have no doubt that the newspaper felt the loss. It was not exactly...
Probably felt the loss. But, you know, Monty might have felt the wrath of the corporate owners.
Well, you were owned by a corporation at that time.
Yes.
So that's a possibility they would have been mad. Although, again...
Yes. But he survived it.
But you folks are not overlooked by the Federal Communications Commission
right.
at the newspaper.
Right.
And that's where the airwaves are not ours, right? They're supposed to be given to us in the public interest. The problem being that when you have an FCC commissioner, a chairman, Brendan Carr, chosen by President Donald Trump, which, you know, the FCC has so much power here over the licensing of stations. When this guy comes in and says, quote, after hearing Jimmy Kimmel speak, that his comments are, quote, truly sick and his agency has a strong case for holding Kimmel, ABC, and network parent Walt Disney Company accountable for spreading misinformation. He said the comic appeared to be making an intentional effort to mislead the public that Kirk's assassination was a right-wing Trump supporter. That's dangerous. Now you have the ire of the FCC chairman threatening your license to broadcast. And it's not only the network we're talking about. We're talking about all the affiliates. Now you apply that to something like NPR affiliates like us. They already took that money away. They called us anti-American in the Congress in a hearing. What's to say they won't start going after individual licenses now? This is a chilling effect, and it's being done on purpose. What more evidence do you need than one case after another, including the New York Times lawsuit now that we haven't talked about, I believe this administration is going to try to go after Times versus Sullivan. They're going to try to get it in the Supreme Court, and they're going to try to make it so that you can't say anything bad about a public official, first and foremost, Trump.
David Frum had tweeted saying something to the effect, try to imagine the reaction if the Biden administration had demanded that Fox fire Greg Gutfeld because he wasn't sufficiently sad about the assault on Paul Pelosi, and how flip and mocking the president was. Did you watch the whole episode of Jimmy Kimmel, the lines that referred to Kirk and Trump? I encourage everybody to find, it's easy to find online. And if you watch the whole thing, I think what really was a last straw was where he made fun of President Trump using President Trump's own words, which I think the media should be reporting about how wacky the president is, that there's something wrong with him mentally. So he was throwing a softball question. So this was incorporated into Kimmel's shtick that night. And they had the reporter saying to the president, oh, how are you holding up with the loss of your friend? And you see him saying it, oh, pretty good, pretty good. And have you seen over here the ballroom that we're working on? We're doing a great job with this ballroom. And, you know, that is unstable. And that kind of gets glossed over and sane-washed.
Well, speaking of it, Ira, you brought this up. Brian Kilmeade.
Yeah, here's a guy who's a regular on the apparently very popular Fox and Friends show in the morning, who said that they're discussing the homeless or the mentally ill. And he said, in effect, well, why don't we just give them a lethal injection? I mean, can you imagine the uproar had that comment been said by a Democrat?
You're so mean. He apologized.
Well, that's right. He did apologize. And he's still working. What about now, Matthew Dowd, the commentator on ABC, who said something that perhaps he would have rethought, although he doesn't seem to be terribly contrite about it. But all he did was say it, and the next day he was gone. Why is Brian Kilmeade still working?
Right. So they're talking about how to deal with homeless people and mentally ill people. He's talking about transgender people. But he says, lock them up, put them in jail, have the mental institutions back, or involuntary lethal injection or something. Just kill them. I mean, give me a break. Right. And he's still back the next day.
Apparently, the FCC chairman did not hear those comments. Otherwise, I'm sure he would have instructed Fox to.
And there's probably no way to hear them now.
Well, you know, this really comes down, and I think we've mentioned it already, to following the money. Let's face it, guys. Both Disney and Nexstar have FCC business ahead of them. Disney seeks regulatory approval for ESPN's acquisition of the NFL Network, and Nexstar needs the Trump administration to go ahead to complete its $6.2 billion purchase of broadcast rival Tegna. Don't tell me leaning on them doesn't say, hey, if you don't take care of this situation promptly, you're not going to get your deal, because it has to be approved by the FCC.
Without a doubt, the Trump administration has found the secret sauce, and this is something that makes companies like Nexstar vulnerable, and he's taking advantage of it.
And yet they have the money, so many of them, to fight it. Why, Ira, when we understand in our journalism ethics that if you're telling the truth and you know it, you are protected. You should be able to stand up to that lawsuit and fight it, including this one against the New York Times, Donald Trump's $15 billion defamation lawsuit against the newspaper and four of its journalists, which they call meritless and an attempt to discourage independent reporting. So, you know, the New York Times is pushing back. Why don't these other people push back? I know it's the money, right?
Without a doubt. Beyond the fact that, as the New York Times itself said, that this lawsuit is meritless, which it is, they have the wherewithal to defend themselves. It's too easy to sort of give in if you can't afford to fight.
But you're telling me ABC and Disney and CBS can't afford to fight?
I'm telling you that they can't afford to fight because they've got a lot of money at stake and they don't want to fight.
Right, there we go. They don't want to fight.
There it is.
They don't want to stand up for the free press, and they could be running a national network of canneries, you know, instead of a network of media outlets, and they could care less, the people in charge. They're worried about their own bottom line, and that's all that's important to them.
The other part of this history and the history of democracies is that we have a right to be critical, to make fun of, to be satirical about the people who lead us. we must be able to criticize the leadership of this country for what they're doing in order to maintain that democracy. And you're seeing the tenets of that being challenged and little by little being eroded.
It's part of this great tradition in this country. I'll go back to Will Rogers. There may be somebody before him who I don't know, but start with Will Rogers and you can go to Bob Hope and then you can go to Johnny Carson. Every generation has had, in this case, the person or the people, but have the history of making fun of the government. It's part of our DNA.
Saturday Night Live. Will they be next? That's what I wonder. By the way, President Trump has his own social media, Truth Social, where he gets to do and say whatever he wants. And one of his criticisms of these people is their low ratings. So if they have such low ratings and no one's really paying attention to them, why are you so upset? Why do they need to be punished?
Yeah, he's only bringing more attention to them by complaining about them.
Right.
But he's getting rid of them.
He is. So is there an answer here? Are we in trouble since they don't listen to protests and they can demonize them any way they want? What's the fix here?
The fix is that the reputable media organizations, which, by the way, in my view, are most of them, have to find the wherewithal, literally and figuratively, to stand up to these onslaughts, because the onslaughts, if they don't stand up, they're going to get run over by them.
And the politicians who are worried about this, which should be all of them, should be speaking up more loudly and clearly, the way Bernie Sanders has in response to this. Chris Murphy from Connecticut, senator from Connecticut, has a really good short video on Twitter or X just talking to the public about this is really serious, this is bad, and that people have to be aware of it, speak up. The leaders of our country, the leaders, and then let it funnel down, the leaders of our communities need to be speaking up. This is unacceptable.
Well, and I'm really worried because, you know, the New York Times versus Sullivan decision, which established the actual malice standard for defamation lawsuits by public officials, seems to me that's what Trump wants to go after. Now, he even used that phrase, I believe, in part of the lawsuit, that the Times had actual malice in denigrating him. You know, let's say it does get entertained by a judge. It gets called up. Then it ends up in the Supreme Court. Are you telling me that we couldn't see, with this Supreme Court, the end of New York Times versus Sullivan protection? Ira?
I wouldn't want to put my last dollar on it.
Yeah, I mean, we've already heard over the last few years that that is a goal of some on the court who have believed that Times versus Sullivan went too far in offering protections, and Trump just wants to get this to the Supreme Court so they can start rewriting the libel laws.
Well, he's in England right now with the king, so maybe he's consulting them on how they go after folks. They're a little tougher over there in England, aren't they?
Yeah, it's much easier to win a libel suit in England.
Well, folks, we haven't heard the last of this. I hope you'll stay informed and pay attention. And quite frankly,
and speak up.
Speak up and support public media. Support those institutions that you take part in as a consumer. And make sure that you're there and stand up for them.
And support your local newspaper. I tell you, I don't get too annoyed about stuff as much as I did when I was working, but I read frequently the comments on Facebook under the articles from my old newspaper. And I can't tell you how many times the complaint is they could not open up the article because it was behind a paywall. And why? And look at that damn newspaper. Why is it behind a paywall? Not understanding that if there was no paywall, there'd be no revenue. And if there'd be no revenue, there'd be no articles, period.
I think they understand it.
Yeah, they
just
do.
Don't think it applies to them.
Well, I don't know about that. I think that the media has itself to blame, because when the internet came out, we decided we weren't going to put paywalls up and we let it all go for free. Then the aggregators came in, took our stuff, put it up in one location where everybody could go, and they get it there for free. So it's
more.
Hard to put, you can't put that back in the bottle after you've let it out, right?
Yeah, I've been saying that on this program for years. It was the biggest mistake that our industry made, was not putting up paywalls immediately.
And I don't think they anticipated the Craigslist. Remember the
Craigslist stole,
was going to come around and steal all their classifieds.
And did.
And did.
Yeah.
And did. Well, it's time to ask the manager, because, you know, it's
Aaron Boone.
You stop it with your Yankees. I'll go with Alex Cora.
They won last night, right? Night before this taping.
This is about sports, so we can stay with this theme right now. In the old Ask the Manager show, people would write in their questions and ask. We got a letter. And it says, I'm a regular listener to the Media Project. I have several comments related to your latest edition of the program. I found it interesting that you seem to come out in favor of sports reporting when WAMC has stopped reporting local sports results at the 6:19 and 7:19 a.m. time slots in favor of local headlines. This, while they report the same local headlines at the top and bottom of the hour and again at approximately 6:45 and 7:45 a.m., I could challenge that. And an aside, I think Ira Fussfeld adds something to your broadcast, as I'm sure others do.
I agree.
Oh, he's great. We love Ira Fussfeld.
And a former sports guy.
Let me sort of give you the short version of what's happened. We decided at WAMC, those of us in news, and this was a series of discussions. This didn't happen overnight. In fact, it's been talked about for a long time. We took away the sports report at 6:19 and 7:19. I hear you, listeners. This is not an easy adjustment. If you're used to that, if it's part of your regular listening in the morning, you're wondering what happened. Well, let's put it to you as succinctly as we can. It's 2 minutes long. Most of it is just the scores. There's no time to give you much color. You're not going to get any video. You're not going to get any audio. And in this day and age where you can literally have the scores sent to your phone in the morning, you can open it up and see the home run by Aaron Judge, most people do not get their sports from public broadcasting. I checked most of the other stations in our listening area, public stations that do this. None of them do sports scores. Now you say, well, that's why you're so great. You should do the sports scores. But I'm telling you, in the morning, when the first thing you have to do is put your time into sports, understanding how the tennis players and the hockey players and all these names are pronounced, because certain times you can't get away without saying the name. Then what you're doing is you're spending all this time on sports and not spending the time on writing up the news that's broken in the morning. And what we need is more news, if anything, in this difficult time than the entertainment that sports provides, when we can do deep sports interviews about events that do have a broader meaning or a broader impact and not completely eliminate sports.
So you have to make a determination, I would think, and now this is a newspaper guy telling what a radio guy should do, but I would presume you need to make a determination of how many people actually do look forward to and want to hear those results.
Yes.
And if it's a significant enough number, then you'll plug it back in, I don't doubt.
And that's a great point, because we know that about 20 people have now checked in. That probably means there's more, because not everybody's going to just take the time to do that. So we know there's more. So we are in a holding pattern. We are reviewing it. We are paying attention. Hopefully this show will prompt others to share what they feel. Media@WAMC.org. The definitive decision has not been made.
The other thing, and I don't know if this applies to radio as well as to newspapers, but in my experience, every time we did a readership survey, the sports readership was a relatively low number, consistently a low number. But what was a strong number among that group of people, they were very loyal to the newspaper. There may only have been 15% who wanted sports, but they were there every day to get the sports.
Yeah.
So it's possible that this group that you're hearing from now represents a significant number of people who don't, particularly older demographic, who may not know their way around the internet or who may not be staying up for the 11 o'clock news, who just don't know the score until they hear it here in the morning. That's something that has to be determined.
That's a great point. I agree with everything you said about that. And Ira and I have both run into those kinds of challenges as editors of papers. Do we drop a certain thing, anticipating that people may not be interested in it, and it's a way for us to save money or spread our resources in another way. On the sports reporting end, so I'm thinking about that older, loyal readership that is not going to be looking at their phones. They're waking up in the morning, they're turning on their station, WAMC. They didn't stay up to see the end of the West Coast game. So all they want to know is the Yankees won or lost. Just, a 30-second rundown of the scores of the major games that those listeners might be listening to. I bet you could squeeze that in. It doesn't cost you any money to do it.
Well, I think we probably could, although when you look at the number of teams that you have to report on, because we're portions of seven states, it's very hard to get that in 30 seconds. Also, he's talking about local sports. Well, we really don't do any local sports.
Yeah,
we do the national teams, And on occasion, we've thrown in some more local sports. But what, you're going to just do UAlbany and not do all the other universities in our area?
So
it's
that
fraught.
That is a dilemma.
It's fraught with the size of this audience.
Say you just went with the top ones. Or maybe you get back to some of those people who cared enough to complain. Because you're right, Dave. If 20 people complained that they were motivated enough to actually talk to you, there's lots of people that just like rolled their eyes and shrugged and complained to their neighbors or their friends, but are not telling you. Maybe talking to some of those people who cared enough to complain and seeing if there's what would satisfy them in trying to make your ultimate decision.
You heard Barbara. Let us know. media@wamc.org. We're out of time, guys. How did that happen?
We have three lively folks here, not stooges.
Hey,
we weren't funny and satirical enough to get cut.
Well, we're going to cut this show.
It ought to be an hour, don't you think?
No, I think it ought to be about 15 minutes.
I haven't said that in a long time.
Well, you got it in.
You got it in.
Thank you all for being with us on The Media Project. For Barbara Lombardo and Ira Fussfeld, I'm David Gustina. Well, hopefully we haven't turned you off, and you'll join us again next week.
Sadie Smuggery, she wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspaper men meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for...
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian, and Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.